Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Wednesday. Happy National Cheeseburger Day. It is Jeffrey National Cheeseburger Day. I feel a little bit like, if I'm going to be honest, that's cheating, because I'm sure there's a National Hamburger Day. Didn't it feel like we've talked about National Hamburger Day, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I just can't tell, like, if I'm just getting older and you can't remember if this happened 3 months ago or a year ago. But yes, it does feel like we just had one to me.
It feels like we literally just had, and so let's just see, National Hamburger Day. It seems to be July
4th.
National Hamburger Day is variously marked on May 28th, July 28th, and December 21st.
Okay, so now I don't feel quite as old.
The May 28th seems to be the most popular, however. And the holiday is often noted as the hashtag National Hamburger Day.
Jeff, which was the orthodox? What's the?
So I think we're going to settle on May 28th as National Hamburger Day,
which makes sense. That's right around Memorial Day usually.
And then September 18th is National Cheeseburger Day. Which do you consider the authentic day? I think cheeseburger is just a condiment to put on a. On a hamburger.
I mean, the real question is which one comes first. Like, who?
The hamburger came first.
No, but I'm saying, like, which day? Which?
Oh, in the calendar?
Yeah.
But there's no question.
I'm saying, not on the yearly calendar. Which day started first?
Which came first in man's invention? Right. Let's start with that. And I guarantee you.
The
hamburger came first.
Someone figured out how to ground beef, and then someone figured, hey, what if we put this on this delicious sliced bread? And then someone's like, I got another idea. What if we put cheese
exactly.
on it?
Exactly. Yeah. How about put some cheese on
That's
it?
That's the real theory of evolution, Darwin. Move over.
So right now, though, since it is National Cheeseburger Day, Jeffrey, you want a cheeseburger today. Where are you going?
Ooh. I'll probably go Tops.
You're going Tops?
Yeah.
And you're driving through?
Likely. Yeah, I'm solo dad. Aaliyah's on another work trip this week, so I probably am obviously not doing this because that becomes getting a 13-month-old in a car with a dog, like that becomes an issue.
Someone to me brought up Alex's Tavern.
Oh, great burger. Phenomenal burger.
As a great burger.
Yeah.
Obviously, Huey's is the classic.
Can never go wrong.
And then, but I probably, just for proximity, I might go to the Belmont. I mean, if I wasn't driving through and getting and supposedly there are 50 cent double cheeseburgers at McDonald's, you probably need the app for that.
Probably.
But if you weren't.
You definitely need the app for that.
If you need the app for that. But if I want a cheeseburger, it's close by, near my house, near the radio station. I'm probably going to Belmont.
The problem is if I go to the Belmont, I agree with you. Their burger's delicious. But
it's dark and cold in there, though.
Steak sandwich is on the menu.
That's true. Well, my kids always got the French dip. French dip is awesome there. And it's not, I want to tell you people, it's not National French Dip Day.
No.
It's National Cheeseburger Day. Have some integrity.
Yeah, come on.
Have some integrity about your day.
We're going to have rules.
Today on the radio show, John Martin's going to join us in the next segment. Then Chris Harrington, straight up at 10 o'clock. And then Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman has been writing about all kinds of stuff. Wrote recently about plans for the new Audubon, for a new clubhouse at Audubon Golf Course. And also we have more on the gun stuff, you know, the gun referendum, whatever. Plus, Sam has moved downtown. He lived sort of midtown previously. Now he's moving downtown. And we'll ask Sam what that's like. We'll check in with him on his pats, too. So anyways, that's the show. We got John Martin, then Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then Sam Hardiman. So busy day on National Cheeseburger Day. Before we do anything else, I do want to say we were on with Fishman yesterday when he's the one, and I had seen headlines about this, about the pagers exploding, the Hezbollah pagers exploding in Lebanon. I have to say, that is an insane story. Like the notion that you were able to get, and it turns out it's not, we've got further clarity on this. Yesterday, we were speculating whether it was just something in the cell phone / pagers, and we know now it's pagers. There was activated batteries. There was some signal they were able to overload the battery. No, it turns out these were pagers that Hezbollah stopped using cell phones because cell phones can identify where you are.
Yeah, tracking.
So they said, we're doing pagers. So they got pagers, and they got a shipment of pagers. And evidently, in the old pager manufacturing process, they were able to plant small amounts of explosives in all of these pagers, and then sent a signal yesterday to blow them up all at once. It is like that's out of a movie. Yes.
No, you know, I mean that's the first thing I was thinking of. It's obviously a little bit different, but like. The Ocean's 13 plot point where, spoiler alert, everyone, this movie's like 15 years old, but they go to rig the dice, they go to the plant in Mexico and infiltrate the plant.
Yeah, so now you ruin that movie for me. Thanks, Jeffrey.
You're welcome.
But that's clearly what happened here. Now, it is a little interesting. I don't think we want to turn this into the something about the morality of war, right? It's freaking genius, and it must be in some ways psychologically, like we can get you anywhere. We are capable of doing this. Like it has to be a psychological blow. Plus, what can Hezbollah do now? Carrier pigeons? They already said they're not going to use cell phones. If they're not going to use pagers, you know what are they going to do now? Like,
I mean, it's either that or like good old fashioned note taking, right?
The U.S. mail.
Yeah. Invent a new US code, mail. Are we gonna have to like get into like 1945 or whatever the World War II with the Enigma? Like, are we gonna have to have a new machine?
Now they had to in this moment. This is when they chose to reveal they had it. Like, you can only do this once, right? But here's the question.
Okay.
Is this moral? I'll make the argument both ways. The argument one way that I mean,
they're at war with a terrorist organization.
I think it's moral, but some were saying this is state terrorism. They're blowing people up in grocery stores. An 8-year-old girl was killed. Like there was like wherever. But anyone that they blew up is a soldier. You know, by definition, they've got a Hezbollah pager on them. They have a Hezbollah pager on them, and so literally anyone they blew up is by definition a soldier.
Yeah.
So anyway, just an incredible. Incredible story. Continuing with the Fishman segment.
No, but I mean, Jeff, I've started watching. I don't know if you have Apple TV Plus. Started watching Slow Horses. So we got a little. It's a British espionage.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've heard good things about.
Very good.
Is it?
Very
is it?
Good.
Yeah. Anyway, and also today, continuing the Fishman update. Today we'll learn about the interest rates. Woo! Interest rates will go down today. And as Charles is on pins and needles, he's asking me, am I betting on a quarter point or am I betting on a half point? That's what we've come to.
Anyway, the official stance of the show is the quarter point.
The official stance of the show is a quarter point. The prediction is a quarter point. So as we've been speaking, Jeffrey, we have a bunch of news things we have to get to here in the first segment. As we have been speaking, no surprise, but the University of Memphis released a press release that confirmed Memphis men's basketball head coach Penny Hardaway announced two additions to the team's staff on Wednesday, with Mike Davis and Nolan Smith joining the program as assistant coaches for the 24-25 season. Davis comes to Memphis after spending the last six seasons as head coach at Detroit Mercy. Didn't go well last year. His coaching resume touts 35-plus years of experience on the sideline, including 24 years of head coaching experience with 14 postseason trips. Squads have recorded at least 20 wins nine times. 20 wins now meaningless. Can we agree on that? While posting a winning record in 15 of his 24 campaigns. But let's be honest. Experienced head coach. Smith, who is really, I think, considered the better get here. Smith arrives on campus after spending the last eight seasons an assistant coach or director of basketball ops at the high major level. Most recently as an assistant the last 2 years at Louisville, speaking of didn't go well, after spending the previous six seasons alongside the legendary, and this is a warm your heart, Mike Krzyzewski at Duke 2016-22. Nolan is a grit and grind guy and is one of the brightest young coaches in college basketball, Hardaway said. He works hard and has a passion for the game that is unmatched. He brings a championship mindset to our team after not only having won a national championship as a player, but also by learning from one of the all-time greats in Mike Krzyzewski. Our players are going to love being in the gym with Nolan, and we are excited to have him and his family part of Tiger Nation. So there you go. None of that is any surprise. We knew that that is where it was headed, but it is now official. And I would suggest that folks should embrace this. Obviously, Penny has. He has a staff that he wants. It's
for now.
Pretty clear. For now. It's pretty clear that that things did not go well with Rick Stansbury, right? He did not want Rick Stansbury part of the staff. Like, let's be honest. That's why he fired him. And the truth is, it may go back to last year. Like, your theory is it goes back to the second half. I mean, it goes back to the Missouri game.
Yeah, the Missouri game.
Which is when people started saying, some people started saying, I wonder if Memphis would be better off if Rick Stansbury were the coach. But anyway, it did not go well, and you can't have a giant schism on your staff and have an effective coaching staff. So now Penny has two guys that he wants in these two roles. I was a little disappointed, honestly. Like, he talked last week and was asked about this. Do you remember this story? I read it in Parth's story in the Daily Memphian. He wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah, in the you mean in the quote unquote candid Rothstein interview?
No, not that one. He did one. He did a local one with local media.
Oh, did he? Yeah, okay.
After last week, and he said, I'm not going to talk about it because I know the narrative you guys are spinning and whatever else like that. That one. And I guess I would just say there's like, that was a bad week. Everyone noticed, everyone said this is weird. It's aberrational. Most well-run programs aren't having mass firings, you know,
on
the eve of the season beginning. Like, it's unusual. And maybe it suggests something could be wrong, and my God, we don't need more drama and all of that, right? We had that. We had that week, and plus that came on top of the news about the letter and the possible alleged NCAA allegations. But so we had that week, and then we had the reactions that we had. But now, like, you just move on. And I think, let's be honest, there's not some narrative that people are trying to spin about the...
If anything, it's reaction.
It is what it is. Yeah, it happened. People are going to have... And it is not normal. That's not it's not a narrative. It's not someone's agenda to say this is not normal. It's just not normal. And so I was disappointed that a week later, Penny, you know, couldn't just talk with enthusiasm, and at least in this release he did, you know, about
Agreed.
The new coaching hires.
Yeah.
Because in the end, the way through this, it's very clear. Ryan has shown the way. Now, Ryan didn't have this array of personnel issues, and Ryan didn't have the NCAA issues, but Ryan had unpopularity issues.
Buy-in issues? Maybe not from his team, but at least from the fan base?
From the community, and he had lack of success issues. So... And you know what he did? He just put his head down. He had that one moment where he sort of complained about the negativity. I guess it was after they won the Temple game maybe last year. He sort of lashed out a little bit. Mostly, he's just...
Yeah, no, it was the Temple game because that was the end of the regular season. Yeah.
Yeah. He keeps his head down. and he wins games, and he shows that the way through this, again, the NCAA may have something to say about it, but the way through this is just to win. Like, the way through this is just to you've got this great staff now, your staff that you think is going to be a great staff, and you've got a team that you've put together that you like because they guard. And so just go win. Just go, don't give anyone anything to complain about, and be upbeat, positive, and just go win. And I'm in the end, I do think, I when the AD was on with us recently, when Ed was on with us recently, you meet this stuff head on. You talk positively and hopefully about the future. You address it openly, and away you go. Like, and in the end, this will either be decided by the NCAA. That's the unknown. But apart from that, well, it's going to be decided on the court.
Yeah.
Like, I do think...
I still think largely gets decided by that.
Yeah. And so if Penny... And not only that, it's really pretty much pass-fail. Like, the bar isn't that high.
No, it's just make the tournament.
The bar is make the tournament. And so this is pass-fail. If you don't make the tournament, I have a hard time believing Penny will be the coach next year. If he does make the tournament, he will be the coach next year, unless he doesn't want to be, and, you know, barring this NCAA stuff. So it's pass fail. It's not a high bar. No one's saying second weekend. No one's saying deep run. No one's saying any of that. Just make the tournament. Prove that last year was an aberration. Then you will have gone to 3 out of 4 tournaments, and away we go. Like, it's fine. So just there's no need to perpetuate the angst of 2 weeks ago, right? Or however many weeks ago it was now. You got the staff, you got the team, go win games. Okay, there was that. Secondly, we did have, we had all the discussion yesterday, and we had the Tim Pernetti. It was after this show that he talked to the general media in Memphis and suggested, oh, hey, we might be able to willing to move the basketball tournament to Memphis.
No.
But that's not the kind of thing that's going to keep Memphis in the end. This is a math. This is a math question. Like, someone came on Twitter came at me today, and I don't know where they were quoting from, but they were quoting from someone who said that the Pac-12, the ceiling for the Pac-12 TV deal is $10 million. That's what they said. And then they editorialized, that's not a lifeboat, that's an anchor, because I had said that the Pac-12 could be a lifeboat. But the truth of the matter is that we don't really know the math. Like, you can speculate as to what the ceiling will be. And by the way, we also don't know what the floor will be for the AAC's next contract. Like, you know, like, so...
Let's take that point. The league is very lucky, and Mike Oresca had his flaws, but one thing that he did well that I don't think he gets enough credit for is, after losing all that he lost in terms of his media value, he did at least keep the contract at roughly the same value. Like, that's a huge thing.
And it's... It's a lot easier for the Mountain West teams to go because they have a much smaller TV deal.
Correct.
You know, so Memphis has a more robust TV deal, $8 to $10 million a year. So, they're learning something about the numbers, and they probably won't have a guarantee about what the numbers would be.
But it's impossible to guarantee because, like, you know, I've used the example all week. Zillow can tell you what your house is worth, which is the same thing as media consultants telling you, hey, you have these brands.
By the way, how often do you look at Zillow?
So I don't do it as often as my wife does.
I look all the time.
Here's what I do
with
them.
And I look all the time. I just say, what is my house worth today?
It's when I go to new cities. And like I was walking around Boston back in whatever the spring. And I was walking in Back Bay, and you know those brownstone townhomes?
Yeah, you'll look up to see what one of those houses is.
And one of the brownstones that was for sale, this wasn't even like the best one. It was like $7.5 million. And if you go and you look on the Memphis database, like, we haven't sold a house in the entire county for $7.5 million. Like,
if you go to joshhasthebuyers.com, yes, you can put in your address and get an instant what your house is worth. I'll just say that in passing. But yes, I do like... But anyway, your point is, you can go to Zillow, but until you put your house on the market, you don't really know what your house is worth.
I mean,
I think
what are these companies going to pay? They spend a lot on the NBA.
Yeah. it's a little different because you can actually have conversations with the companies.
For sure.
Whereas you can't with Zillow, you're not talking to the people who will be potentially bidding on your house. That's just raw numbers and approximation. But I take your point. So there's a lot. And then I had people predicting one way or another. I've seen people predict they're going, and I've seen people predict they're not going. And I'm not going to make a prediction, honestly.
I'll go out there. I spoke to your boy John Canzano yesterday.
You did?
Yeah. He was on the show.
On the air?
Yeah, he was on the show.
Oh, you had him on the show. Good for you.
You can go, if you haven't heard it, you can go. Brad's put it up as a podcast. It's a very good interview, as Jeff has always pointed out. John's so plugged in on all this.
John's great, yeah.
They're going.
Yeah, that would be my inclination. But if they're going then, Jeffrey, are they going into the wake of, into the yawning uncertainty?
So I think by going, the one thing that you risk is if there is total implosion, you maybe risk having a more geographically prudent conference, like whatever's left over from the ACC, you know, if that's like NC State, Louisville, like schools that at least geographically make more sense. But I think they're going to do their damnedest to avoid doomsday, as we're starting to see with this Clemson, Florida State, revenue sharing, all that we're seeing in the ACC. So you are risking that. I still don't believe the Big 12 is ever an option. If you were going to be in the Big 12, you'd be in there by now. Like I firmly
That's the
believe
thing. The Big 12 can come and get you if they
Correct.
Wanted to. The So yesterday, the other news, as you alluded to, and for just people who missed it or haven't seen, reports are that the ACC is looking at a quote unquote altered revenue structure that would keep Clemson and Florida State in the ACC and would then keep the ACC together. Obviously, by altered revenue structure, they mean a structure by which Clemson and Florida State get more money.
Correct.
You know, and so the reports are unclear if the presidents will like it, unclear if it will get approved, but this would avert the implosion that some think is coming toward the ACC. That's the idea. And for a lot of people yesterday, when they saw this news, they're like, wow, this changes everything for Memphis. And I didn't believe it changed everything for Memphis because I thought, like you, Memphis was going anyway. You know who this changed everything for? This changed everything for the people who wanted to wait for that scenario, that totally hypothetical scenario. There are fans out there who've said, why would we go to the Pac-12 when the ACC is going to blow up and we can get Louisville and Virginia Tech and NC State and whatever else? Let's do that. As I said in my column yesterday, that is an entirely hypothetical scenario.
Yeah.
You know, like it is entirely hypothetical. So the reason that you wouldn't wait for that, it is, again, entirely hypothetical. And so I don't think you can turn down something that is demonstrably better than what you have now. And the Pac-12, at least in the collection of teams, is demonstrably better than what you have now. You can't turn that down for an entirely hypothetical scenario that you have dreamed up in your head.
Correct.
And for me, what happened yesterday was just confirmation of how hypothetical this was. We're like, oh, well, we know for sure the ACC is going to blow up, and we know for sure that Louisville and Virginia Tech and whoever else are going to be. No, you do not. It's entirely hypothetical. And yesterday proved exactly hypothetical it was, because now it appears that Clemson and Florida State are in talks to stay in the ACC. So it only changes. I don't really think it does change the dynamics for Memphis to the extent that if you go join the Pac-12, you're presumably you're walking away from the possibility that might happen.
Yeah.
And if yesterday's news means that possibility, however hypothetical it was, is even smaller now, I guess that's reassuring. But I don't think yesterday's news for the decision makers at the University of Memphis was the thing that tipped the scales. I think they're either going or not, depending on what they're getting from the Pac-12, what the arrangement will be with the Pac-12, what they're hearing from the Pac-12, and it didn't depend on yesterday's news happening. Hell, your interview with John Canzano indicating he thought they were going, that happened well before this Clemson and Florida State news came out, did it not?
It did. I would also point out, let's not forget, what was it, a month ago that we thought UConn was headed to the Big 12. So my whole deal with the Florida State Clemson news is somebody leaked the news that wanted the news out there. And to me, it seems likely it's somebody that's trying to squash maybe ACC panic. We've gone through this drill before. I think we did it. I can't remember if it was last summer or the summer before. Like, to me, like, I'm still, it doesn't really change anything that I think about the ACC. I also don't think it should change anything about Memphis's calculus. To me, if you wait on the ACC, you bring in, okay, maybe you bring in best case scenario, but you also bring in worst case scenario.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. There have been things that we knew were going to happen in conference realignment all the time that have not happened. Most notably, we knew once upon a time, back when FedEx was offering to sponsor the Big 12 championship game,
like everything.
Like, we knew that Memphis was going to the Big 12. We didn't, like, whatever. But Memphis boosters did. Like, the most powerful Memphis boosters swear that they knew that Memphis was headed to the Big 12. That's how uncertain all of it. And then, by the way, the Big 12 didn't. First, Memphis didn't make the list.
They didn't even make the finalists.
They didn't make the finalists. And then the Big 12 didn't expand at all.
Yeah, because it was all just a sham.
It was all just a sham. So, again, that's why I've been saying all along that this ACC scenario that some of you have been banking on is entirely hypothetical. It was before last night's news about Clemson and Florida State, and it just became, if anything, that just illustrated why you don't put your faith and future into a hypothetical. If the Pac-12 is offering you something that is better than what you have now, you don't wait in the hopes that something might just come along, because look at the last 25, 30 years. Evidence is it's not coming along. So that's where we are. That was the news on that yesterday. In terms of timing, again, John Canzano reporting that a meeting today, Jeffrey, I think it's today.
He said midweek, so the assumption was either today or tomorrow, yes. But today seems
so
most likely.
About Memphis and Tulane. So that's where we are on that. In other college news yesterday, we had the news out of Knoxville that they are going to be adding a talent fee.
Are they trying to get into radio?
To every ticket, a 10% talent fee, I think it is, right?
Yes.
To every ticket, and that will that money will go to the players to help them pay for the revenue sharing that is coming down the pike. So there you have it, a talent fee. Now, it is funny. In the end, it appears that Tim Buckley and I disagree on everything, because yesterday we did these columns over the weekend about, I mean, that ran yesterday in the Daily Memphian.
Move over, dueling pianos. We got dueling columns.
Right. It's exactly right. We're going to open a bar on Beale Street. So we had he was writing Memphis should not go to the Pac-12. And I'm like, that's dumb. I'm going to write the opposite. And so, because I didn't want that to be the official position of the Daily Memphian. I strongly disagreed with it. He strongly feels the other way. So we wrote those columns yesterday. Turned out fabulously. So now we see this talent fee in Tennessee, and Tim is saying, I nearly threw up when I saw it. He finds it offensive. And I'm thinking, genius. Like, this
you can
is,
get it.
This is genius. If people will pay for it, and here's the thing. If a Ticketmaster puts a handling fee on your ticket, you know what you are? You're mad, right? You're mad. You're like, what the hell did they do for that? What do I get out of that? You said it was going to be $125 a ticket. Now all of a sudden it's $174 because of your handling fee? That's preposterous. That's ridiculous.
By the way, I just did this all on a computer. What did you handle?
Right. What did you handle? But if what it is a talent fee, and you're like, you know, I'm paying Nico. You know, I help make that happen. That, you know, see that sack? That's, I co-sponsored that sack. Like, if there's anything that I would imagine football fans wouldn't mind paying for, it's talent, right? Because they want to win games. Now, you can argue that the talent fee should have been included in the ticket price anyway. Like, you know, so that would be the counter argument.
Why can't we keep the $135 ticket and just give 10% from that? But yes, continue.
So the whole thing's a little bit of a scam. But I think actually advertising something as a talent fee makes it less objectionable to pay it. If you would simply raise ticket prices, and they are also raising ticket prices, but if you'd simply raise ticket prices 10% because you say you guys will pay it, no, that's the real, like, we know you're going to pay it, so we're just going to keep raising ticket prices until you say uncle. And right now, by the way, you know how big the waiting list is at Tennessee football for season tickets? That's a big stadium. 15,000. They got a 15,000 wait list for Tennessee tickets. And so they are saying, yeah, we're going to stick this talent fee on there, and this is going to help us get better players. To me, I don't know how you could better sell or package a really substantial ticket price increase than doing exactly what they did. Your thoughts?
I agree with you. It's also, I kind of respect, at least they're being upfront about it, and they're being honest about it. You know what I mean? Like, what if they just tacked on the thing and like, oh, well, you know, like at least they're telling us what they're doing. And as you point out, they're probably using it as an advertising tool. Like, you know, like, hey, you know, if you don't want to pay this 10% increase, we've got 15,000 people on a waiting list. They'll pay it, you know. And so I think it's smart. I still think I'm a little surprised. Now, it works at Tennessee because they're winning and everybody's kind of fired up right now.
Oh, there's no question. Like, but it does depend on you winning.
I've been surprised. I thought there was going to be a little bit more pushback on basically your fans funding everything. And you know, especially when you consider, like, look at the TV deal. Look at the amount of money they're making.
Yeah, you're already getting all this money pouring in. All of a sudden, we have to tap fans extra from fans to pay for this.
But it just goes to show, baby, everybody loves a winner. And everybody loves being a part of it.
And the truth of the matter is that what capitalism, the way capitalism works is, the way the market works is, most entities charge what they think they can get.
Yeah,
it's not based on what the cost of the product is. It's not based on.
I mean, we talked about this when the Grizzlies raised season tickets. Was that a year ago, a year and a half ago, something like that?
Yeah, you charge based on what you think you can get. Right now, by the way, I'm calling up the current ticket prices. This is for a season ticket, so it's hard to tell because what. Listen, like lower west chairback, okay? That's $450 for the season ticket, but it requires a $2,150 contribution. So the total is $2,600 for that season ticket. How many home games do they have?
Yeah, between seven or eight. You know, I think this year they have seven because they did the Charlotte game, I think.
So if you got seven home games and it's $2,600 a ticket, how much is that?
Seven home games, 2,600. So you're roughly at like 75, 78, something like that. 2,600.
No, it's more than that.
Hang on. Divide by
it's more than that. That would only no, if you have seven home games, it's only $100 a ticket.
I was doing.
Yeah, 371.
Yeah.
Almost $400 a ticket, right? Like that's what, that's NFL prices, right? I mean, that's NFL prices.
I guarantee you, that's high-end NFL prices. I mean, that's good.
Now,
NFL.
what they do is they put, you know, $2,150 of that is contribution. Now, does the contribution entitle you to buy more than one ticket? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. But the idea is,
but what they do, and this is what every college team does, is they take most of the ticket price and call it "quote unquote" a contribution, so it's tax deductible, right? Isn't that
is
tax
it
deductible?
Still? I thought.
Did they take that away?
I know they were trying to take that away, I'm not.
That certainly used to be the scam, right? You're basically getting the federal government to pay a third of your ticket. Anyway, I have no objection to the talent fee. You know, the talent, as you point out, it doesn't work. Like, if you're Mississippi State and you're charging a talent fee, maybe people are, like, desperate enough. They're like, okay, I'll pay any talent fee you want me to pay. But maybe they'll start grumbling, like, where's the talent?
You know?
I mean, so it, what it talent does work. Fee? It does work when it's Tennessee. And by the way, it is announced this week as they're going in to play Oklahoma. It's hard to be more excited than you are right now for Tennessee football. The Josh Heupel Revenge Bowl. Josh Heupel, of course, fired as OC at Oklahoma by Bob Stoops. It was after they got hammered by Clemson in a bowl game. They had a bad year that year, got hammered in a bowl game 40-6, did Oklahoma. They also lost Bedlam that year. Like, it was, that was a bad year at Oklahoma. So they fire Heupel, and good for him. He goes on, and now he's coming back triumphant to play an Oklahoma team. So if you're a Tennessee fan, I think you've got to be awfully excited about this. I was arguing off the air with Jarvis, because Jarvis, God bless him, everyone should have as big a heart as Jarvis. Agreed. Everyone should be as pure-hearted as Jarvis. He was, when we were talking about Memphis football yesterday, he was saying, he keeps saying, you come to see your team. You come to support your team, the way John Calipari. And I said, and I would text back, and I'd say, listen, I agree completely. I think people should just come to support the Tigers. But we can't be naive. If Tennessee had a schedule, a home schedule that looked just like Memphis's, they would not draw the way they draw. They draw the way they draw because you've got SEC powers on that home schedule. And then, sure, they're happy to sit and watch Chattanooga as a warm-up because, you know, you're happy to have a little bit of an hors d'oeuvre because you know the filet is coming. And I simply don't believe that the schedule is irrelevant to any of this. Obviously, there's a deep tradition of supporting your football team at Tennessee. That goes into it. The decades and decades of tailgating and everything else go into it. But the home schedule matters. People don't, in fact. People like Jarvis do, and I wish there were more of them. But people don't just go to support their home team. And they don't, by the way, at Tennessee either. If Tennessee had a crappy schedule, you would see a fall off. And by the way, when Tennessee starts losing games, you'll also see a fall off.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the other thing is, there is a clear changing of mindset. I do think the you go to see your team is definitely something from the generations really before mine, and I think it held true. But it really starts with my generation where, man, there's just not as, like, college and everything became a little bit more transactional. Like, I think about it. My dad, his brother, and his sister, like, they're really the first people in their family to go to college. And so, like, they have a different attachment. Whereas, like, with my generation, it was really just kind of the next thing to do. And what we're really starting to see is, starting with the younger generations, it's harder and harder to get them to go. And I think you have to keep in mind that, like, the market is changing.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to John Martin, then Chris Harrington, and then Sam Hardiman. It is Wednesday. It is National Cheeseburger Day. And we'll be talking to John when we return. In the meantime, I will tell you, if you have something to get framed, you can walk into the Frame Corner, buy a frame, do it yourself. That'd be great. They got beautiful frames. They got all kinds of frames. They got frames you can hang on the wall. They got frames you can stand up on your desk. All kinds of frames. But what they're really great at is custom framing. And we reached the point now where I've been talking about them long enough, because maybe people didn't know where to get something framed in Memphis. But I've been talking about them long enough here that now I hear from people who've gone there one after another and had a fabulous experience with custom framing. It's the Frame Corner, 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. John Martin, when we return, Jeff Cockenshaw, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Yeah, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, I've been telling you about at O'Call, you can get polo shirts in NCAA approved colors, college approved colors. So Memphis colors, Tennessee colors, and Alabama colors, and Ole Miss colors, and that's all great. I have neglected to tell you, also available in quarter zips and hoodies. So there's, you know, you wake up, there's sometimes there's a little bit of a snap in the air now. Just a little bit of a snap in the air now. We're getting to that time. Where it's no longer false fall. It's going to be moving into actual fall. And so if you want to continue wearing your beautiful NCAA-approved collegiate colors in the colors of your favorite school, not some garish big logo thing, just beautiful colors, quarter zips, hoodies, and those same lightweight performance shirts you've been wearing all summer, available at O'Call. That, of course, and everything else that O'Call has. Beautiful clothes, incredibly helpful people. They're the secret sauce. Get an O'Call today or this weekend. It is O'Call. Joined now by John Martin, Jason and John, every single day from 11 until 2. And as we bring John in, we do have breaking news, a Woj bomb, a different kind of Woj bomb. And the breaking news is that Woj is retiring. Woj is retiring from ESPN. And the second bit of news, he is going to become the general manager of the men's basketball program at St. Bonnie, St. Bonaventure, which is where he went to school. We'll talk more about this. He put out a long statement basically saying, this craft transformed my life, but I've decided to retire from ESPN in the news industry. I understand the commitment required in my role, and it's an investment that I'm no longer driven to make. Time isn't an endless supply, and I want to spend mine in ways that are more personally meaningful. John Martin joins me now. John, your thoughts?
Well,
I don't. Yes, hello, John. Hello, John.
Yeah, I'm recovering. You know, I get it. I mean, the thing about the news business, and especially, you know, for Woj, who is not just responsible for, you know, reporting, but he's also like on TV quite a bit. You know, I assume he lives up there, you know, near Bristol. I mean, this job comes home with you. And it's a great job, and it's a blessing to be able to, you know, make a living in the space. But, you know, certainly, you know, I remember what it was like, you know, just chasing recruiting news. It was just, you know, it's constant. It's constant. And even today, like, I have 50 things I'm doing, you know, like, it comes home with you. And it's not easy, you know, when you're sitting around and I got to get on a call. I got to do this. I got to do that. Your kids are running around and laughing and playing. And, like, you can't really be present. You can't really be there. And I assume that the new role with the St. Bonaventures is going to be much more lax. You know, I'm sure it's going to give them a renewed passion. But, you know, like you said, I mean, 37 years of doing this is a long ass time. And it's punishing. This is a punishing industry in a lot of ways. And so I get it. I respect it. And, you know, I wish him the best of luck. What a run.
It's funny, like, it. Whatever this is, you and I don't do what Woj did, and right. And what Woj did, it always struck to me is absolutely insane. Like, here's the truth: when you were the recruiting porter, and you were literally responsible for if some news breaks, you have to go get it. Like right now, this is true for me and it's true for you. We're not really responsible for, you know, you're responsible for showing up and talking about something for 2 hours. Woj literally every bit of NBA news for every NBA team, every freaking draft pick in the first and the second round, he is supposed to break. The life you lead and the life I lead, whatever, yes, you're right. They spill into our personal time or whatever. But I would not have had his life on a platter for 1 year, much less 37. Like once upon a time, Woj was a columnist. He basically did my job in Fresno and then in New Jersey. But the job that he has had and honestly helped create, you know, he created this idea that, you know, we call them Woj bombs. You know, this idea that you have to have every single thing 15 seconds before it's released or whatever else is crazy. Can you imagine? Like, I know that your life isn't easy in many ways, and mine can be hard on the family too. But can you imagine that? Like, that's what he did was crazy. Crazy.
Yeah, no.
He got paid. What do you get paid? $5-10 million a year? Like, I don't know what you got. He makes a huge amount of money. I'll say this though, and I'll just wrap up here. When I read his statement, which was all about, you know, I grew up the son of a factory worker 2 miles from ESPN's campus, only ever dreamed of making a living as a sports writer, 37 years, whatever, overwhelmed. I want to spend my life meaningful. I actually had him pictured out there on an island writing a novel. He's going to work for St. Bonnie's in college basketball. Do you think the general manager of a Division I basketball team, it'll be easier than what he did now. But I'm so happy he's putting down the phone. I actually tweeted back at him. So happy you're putting the phone down. Time to put the phone down. He's not putting the phone down.
No, he's not. But
easier.
But it's 100% easier. It's focused. It's like, you really have one thing that you're, you know, doing, right? Which is raising money, you know, for St. Bonaventures, as opposed to like, oh damn, I gotta make sure I call the assistant general manager of the Orlando Magic back. Like, you know, it's completely different. You know, and that's a lot of pressure, right? I couldn't even imagine, your entire day is probably just calling people.
All day, everything. There's news that happens every day. It's just awful. I can't imagine it.
So, you know, I mean,
he also loves St. Bonnie's. I mean, it's his alma mater. He loves St. Bonnie's. Yeah. So for you, it would be like you saying, you know what? I'm going to go work for the University of Memphis because I love the University of Memphis. If you had $30 million in the bank like he does. You know, I'm just doing this because I love Memphis.
No. I mean, they want me. I mean, I'm happy to do that, but, you know, we got to start to talk.
All right. Well, that's the news. I didn't expect we'd be talking about that. Where are you on the realignment stuff? Where are you on the wisdom of it, and where are you on the likelihood of it as we talk right now at 9:52 on a Wednesday?
Well, I think my position on this has been, you know, pretty well stated from the jump. You know, I've always pretty much been in favor of it as long as it made financial sense, and you know, I think that's the part that everybody's trying to work through right now. I mean, we talked about this with you on the show yesterday. It seems like everybody wants it to happen. It seems like Memphis wants it to happen. It seems like Tulane wants it to happen. The Pac-12 wants both those schools. But I think on Memphis' side, you know, there are considerations that you have to take in, right? It's like, okay, we want to do it. We like the schools a little better. We like the possibility of really locking down that fifth best league, you know, if we bring Tulane and if it's UNLV or somebody else and maybe Gonzaga for basketball. But, you know, it's also, and I get this, it's difficult for a school like Memphis to leave the good thing about the AAC, which is ESPN, right? They are on ESPN, and jump to a place where they don't know where they're going to be. They don't exactly know how much money it's going to, you know, how much more money it's going to be. It will be more money. It's just a question of, okay, you know, how much more travel, things like that, all considered. But look, I mean, I just think in terms of the prestige of the league, the name brand, you know, the quality of opponents, the improvement in the home schedule, The basketball piece of it, which if they add Gonzaga, is absolutely priceless. And Gonzaga seems receptive. I mean, nobody's coming out and just absolutely shutting that down. I just think it's a great move. Again, it has to make financial sense. I don't think Memphis would go if it didn't. But I think that's the challenge, right? That's the holdup right now. It seems like Memphis is trying to really get an answer on that. And I don't know how, outside of, you know, citing media consultants and best guesses, I don't know how you do that. So, you know, I think that's the interesting part of it.
Yeah, the money part. And I you can have some hypothetical talks with the industry, but yeah, I think it that becomes difficult. Just by the way, on the home schedule stuff, right? There is going to be a little bit of a danger in that it's going to be tougher to win in this conference, you know, both in football and in basketball. It's going to be tougher to win. Yeah. That's the trade-off. I've heard people say, well, it's not like you're bringing in Alabama. This isn't going to fill up the stadium. And, of course, that's true. Like, that's true. Right. You're not bringing in Duke and basketball, and you're not bringing it up. How much – leave aside Gonzaga, because we don't know that's happening. Let's just talk about what we know, right? Mm-hmm. What do you – how much better do you think the home schedule would be? And how much of a difference do you think it would make – in attendance? Like, do you think more people really...
Are we talking football or basketball or both?
Both. Eat, you can take them one at a time.
Well, I mean, look, I do think there would be some excitement, you know, some. I mean, there would be really, it would be multi-pronged excitement, right? Because you would have I believe a great philosopher once called it a rocket boost when the renovations are completed,
yeah,
right?
That's what he called it, yes.
You have the rocket boost of the renovations completed, and yes, you will have wind in your sails.
Wind in your sails and a rocket boost.
Yes, you will leave the atmosphere with excitement. I think if this all happens, right? I just think people are fatigued with the American, and so you know you have Boise State. Let's see. Do they add UNLV? Because UNLV's football program is absolutely on the rise. You know, the rest of it, I mean, you know, Washington State, it's not bad. Like, Washington State's a good team. They score a lot of points. Like, that's better than any home game by far that the Tigers have this year. And really any other year, right? I mean, they're comparable to Tulane. And you're bringing Tulane. Is the idea here. So, yeah, I mean, in football, it would be better, no question about it. And then in basketball, you know, like we've talked about, I mean, Boise State, Colorado State, Washington State, San Diego State. San Diego State's a great college basketball team. Like, they're consistent. They're fun to watch. They're tough. Like, that'd be a marquee game, them coming in here on a Saturday night, San Diego State with the black and red jerseys. Like, that would be fun. You know, and then again, we'll see sort of what else, you know, the league adds. Again, is it like a remedy to cure everything? Of course not. It's not, but it's better. And I think that we should be striving for better. You know, maybe not the best. Maybe the best is not possible. But if we can have better, why not take better?
What's funny is Fishman, our mutual friend Fishman, is writing a piece right now about the word better and how great the word better is. Because better, leave aside this conference realignment stuff right now. Best, best sounds unattainable. You know, best sounds like a lot of work. What are the odds you're going to be best in whatever it is? But we can all be better. You know, we can all be a little better tomorrow. We can do better. We can be better. We can have better. I could have a better minivan. You know, I don't need the best car ever, but I could have a better car. Like, better is sort of the American dream. We all just want better. We all can be better. Better is a perfect word. Best is daunting. Best is like, best makes you want to lie down and take a nap. You know, best is getting into the SEC. That's not happening. They're not going to be best. They could be better. They can be better. And I think better is maybe the best we could do is better.
Yeah,
another great philosopher. That's another great philosopher. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, you certainly want to do the best you can, you know, and that may not be the best.
I guess you do.
I mean, You know.
How often do you do the best? How often do you really do the best you can? Like, is today's show going to be the best? No, it's not. You could have done better. You could. It's not going to be the best show. Today's show. I don't know.
What could I have done better? I mean, what could I have done? I mean,
it's not the best. It's not the best. You could have gotten John Canzano yesterday. Instead, Jeffrey got John Canzano yesterday.
Yeah, what? And that was the best he could do.
Yeah, the best he could do. But you didn't do your best, though. You just
how can you say
pretty
that?
Well? Because I'm not. This isn't the best show. If it was, so I could probably pump you for someone. You know.
I hope Brad is listening to this, that you're literally admitting you're mailing it in.
You don't do the very best you can. I'm not mailing it in. But the best? I mean, I'm doing the best I can in this right now as I talk to you. But I could have bumped you for, you know, I could have tried to get Dave Yeager on the show or Woj or whoever, you know, like
Dave
I could be more
Yeager.
Ambitious. I don't know, someone he texted me.
Who did
he
get Dave Yeager?
The reason I thought about Dave Yeager was he texted me the other day. Someone notable, someone fresh, someone who's not just the same person I'm going to be listening to from 11 until 2 today, you know?
That doesn't mean it's not the best, though. I mean, this was a great conversation.
Let's not put too high opinion on ourselves. Anyway,
it's good to have you on talking about better and best.
The show is better. I could ask the presidential candidates. Like, Trump is talking to everyone to prove that he will talk to everyone. And Kamala, she didn't want to talk to national media, but her thing is she's going to be talking to local media. If I'm anything, it's local media, you know? I
don't think you're getting them on the show. But
I was really trying my best.
Do I have to send out emails to them?
The show is better with you on it, John, and I'll be listening from 11 to 2. So I'll see if you're doing your best. Thanks. We got to get out of here.
Thank you.
That is John Martin. If you want a tractor, and why don't you want a tractor? In order to have a tractor, you do need at least a moderate – I'm not talking about, you know, harvesting soybeans here. I'm talking about you need at least a decent piece of land – or a big garden, or you need to be whatever, someone who bush hogs, you know, someone who you just get out there and mow on a tractor. That like you feel better about yourself if you do that. And you feel better if you get down to Mid-South Ag Equipment right down there on Highway 302 in Byhalia. They've got Case IH tractors. They're not these massive, you know, commercial tractors, but they're tractors. I mean, they're real tractors. Case IH tractor, 140 horsepower or less, exactly what you need for that big garden, for that big piece of land. Forget green, go big red with the smaller Case IH tractor. At Mid-South Ag Equipment, these tractors are beautiful. They are in stock and right now 0% financing. Again, Highway 302 in Byhalia. It's Mid-South Ag Equipment. Chris Harrington, when we return, Jeff Calkins, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned, and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this. Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
You Dropped the Bomb on Me by the Gap Band in honor of the latest and maybe last Woj bomb.
Yeah, that was certainly a surprise. Adrian Wojnarowski is retiring from ESPN. Separate news suggests that he is going to St. Bonaventure, his alma mater, to be general manager of that basketball team. I will say, when I first saw the news, I thought to myself, I'm glad he's putting down the phone, because that life that he has led sounds absolutely hellish to me. To have to break every news story for every team, every draft pick, for whatever his paycheck was, I would not have wanted that job on a platter. The new job, it doesn't seem like it's going to be – he's not going to put down the phone entirely if you're general manager of a college basketball team, but obviously very different. I know you've never been a big fan of the kind of reporting that Woj specializes in, but your thoughts on Woj as he announces his retirement.
Yeah, I have somewhat complicated feelings is not the right word. Opinions, I don't have much in the way of feelings, but on it. opinions about all of that. It always seemed to me like Adrian, I don't know Adrian Wojnarowski, never really met him, but it always seemed to me that he was ultimately like too smart to like spend all his time like on this ultimate, essentially meaningless, like, you know, scooping things that are going to be in a press release 30 minutes later and information brokering stuff that I think has sort of had a bad, it sort of had a ultimately negative effect on like NBA media. But like, it seemed to me like that was sort of a waste of his time intellectually. But it was obviously very lucrative, and he was talented enough and driven enough to be great at it and had more success from a financial attention standpoint from that than he would have had just, you know, doing more real writing. But, like, and so I have mixed feelings about that, but, like, good for him to, like, you know, build a big stack of money from doing that and then have the wisdom to, like, okay, that's enough, and go do something that, to your point, it's not like he's going to go lay on a beach, but it's not going to be what he's been doing. I'm sure it will be more enjoyable and fulfilling and have at least a somewhat better work-life balance than what he's been doing, you know, for the last 5 or 10 years or whatever with NBA stuff. And so, you know, good for him for having the talent and drive to do what he did, and good for him to have for having the wisdom to step away from it.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I mean, Woj, before he was Adrian Wojnarowski, NBA reporter, you know, he really sort of was following the exact same trajectory that I did in my career. He went to a little newspaper, you know, then he went to become a columnist in Fresno. I think he was a beat writer in Fresno first. Then he was the columnist as Fresno, which is not that dissimilar from being the columnist in Memphis. Memphis is a little bigger. And then he went to be a columnist in New Jersey. But we were like in the same, you know, in these journalism contests, we were in the same circulation category, and he was a very good columnist / feature writer, all of that. I remember when he it was just before, I think, that whatever the Beijing Olympics were, maybe it was just before then or what it was. I remember when he switched to being an NBA writer, you know, and then he was sort of created along with the internet. You know, his whole career changed dramatically.
He was an NBA writer before he was an NBA tweeter.
Yeah, that's right. He was an NBA writer. Well, it's not unlike, like Gary Parrish is more TV now, but sort of similar. Like Gary was a writer once, you know, he covered college basketball for CBS and CBS Sports, and now he's a TV guy, and then he became an information guy, and now Gary doesn't really. His stock and trade is not breaking college basketball news anymore. It's talking about college basketball on TV, which seems much more entertaining than trying to break every college basketball hire, which he was trying to do at one point. But so that phenomenon, I guess here's the thing. If Woj himself hadn't existed, or Woj had decided, like he wrote a book once about St. Anthony's and the high school basketball team and whatever, and if he just started to write books, he'd never existed as Woj. Would there have been a Woj? And the same thing, it's a little bit like Trump. If Trump had made, like, if at least is Woj a product of the technology and the demand and everything else? And if it hadn't been Woj, it would have been someone else. Is that, I mean, we have Schefter in the, you know, same thing. Schefter is the NFL guy. Maybe not he's not quite as dominant as Woj has been in the NBA. He's not quite the official spokesman, but a little bit. It's the same thing, kind of. It seems like the world of technology has created these people in almost every field, right?
Yeah, no, I think there may not have been someone who was as good at it, or for a time as dominant at it, or as synonymous with it. Like, you know, the Woj bomb is a thing, right?
Right.
But I do think the culture was trending in that direction. I mean, it used to be, like, I think this still exists, but people don't look at it as much. Like, early on, NBA media stuff, like, the Hoops Hype Rumors page would be a thing people would go to, and you're just scanning, looking for, like, nuggets of information or whatever. My thing is that it became so much of it was being the first to report a thing that will be public knowledge. It's not investigative reporting. You're not breaking something that otherwise people won't know about. Like, literally, it's going to be in a press release in 10 minutes. But they give it to you first, and you put it out, and then it comes out on the press release. To me, there's, like, minimal value in that. There's value to you, I guess, but to the world, there's sort of minimal value in that. But it was that absence of a follow-up, you know, context. And, like, to me, there's more value in why is this happening, what does it mean, than, like, being 20 seconds earlier to report the thing that everyone's going to know. And then it also took another turn with him and with Shams and these guys, where there's a sense of, like, information brokering going on, you know? It's not just, shoe leather reporting, I was first to the story. It's that there's, like, you know, the quid pro quo going on between the reporters and the agencies and, like, all this kind of stuff that I think has a little bit of an aftertaste to it.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are times that being first seems truly trivial, like a draft pick. Like you know that in literally 30 seconds it's going to be announced on ESPN. Then there are times that it's a big scoop. We would have known it anyway. When Dave Yeager was fired, right? We would have all known it sooner or later anyway. Dave Yeager was getting fired. But Woj had it first, and there's seemingly... Again, though, we would have known it. Like, for some reason, that seems a little more. Maybe it's just more of a personal triumph. Maybe there's no more actual value to it. But what's interesting is then the next point you made, because, like, as he delivers that news, there is some context there. He explains, "This is what happened." But here's the problem: he explains it in that information brokering way, such that you don't even know if you even trust the context. The context is literally. To serve, and I'm not picking on Woj here, I'm just saying this is the nature of the beast. The context then serves the people who are delivering the news. So you're not even,
that's true.
You're packaging it for them, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. But I would say with something like that, even though you do have to think about, okay, like whose perspective is coming through here, there is reporting, follow-up reporting, and context that comes with that. That's not even really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about...
Yeah.
Like, and I'm talking about things beyond, like, the draft pick, which is really the bottom rung.
Most bottom of the, yes,
right.
It's the
but,
bottom
but a
of
lot
the bottom.
A lot of, like, you know, free agent signings, contract signings, trades that aren't, like, with stars. Like, you know, you report it, you give, like, two sentences of explanation that it comes from the agent, and at this point they're actually crediting the agents, and then you move on, and you're done with it. And so you get the scoop, because you've been given the scoop, and that's how the information brokering works, and then you move on. And then the people who care more, like in whatever local market is, they move in, or maybe a Zach Lowe or someone moves in to actually talk about what it means, you know?
Yeah, it's also interesting to me And maybe this is too inside baseball, but from the perspective of the journalistic enterprise, what is the value of being first? It's obviously there's some personal ego value, right? But for the Daily Memphian or for the CA or for anyone, like, what is the value? And I would suggest that once upon a time, if you had a scoop, it was 6 a.m. The newspaper would hit the driveway. You could only read about it in that newspaper for 24 hours until the other newspapers caught up, right? Now, it lasts for 30 seconds. So I obviously Woj drives people to that ESPN site, and I guess that's sort of the value of it from their perspective.
Yeah, I wonder about that, though. A lot of these tweets, they come to links, you know? They come to the
no
links.
One clicks, they don't clicks, yeah.
Right. So I don't know.
Now, for Woj would set the table for whole conversations on ESPN. I think that's, too, how they thought about it, right? He would set the table for whole conversations. So then what's interesting is there's been kind of
ESPN as an organization is more concerned with your eyeballs on your TV products than your eyeballs on their website. That is also part of it.
Or their eyeballs on their little clip videos that they do now. That's what they really see. Everyone seems to be interested in. So as this sort of industry of news breaking has grown up, and that's not going to go away because Woj goes away. Like, are we now? ESPN will have their own, I'm sure, right? ESPN will have, and other people do it at ESPN already, but...
Shyam Charania became, like, you know, the Woj, you know, nemesis or whatever. And I think, as much as I can be critical, I was critical of the Woj stuff here and there, I think Woj is more elegant about it, you know, than Shyam.
Well, no, Shyam's is definitely, it's definite information brokering. It's not particularly well disguised. Of course, and the story there is that once upon a time, Woj identified Shyam's as this young guy who was incredibly aggressive and is going to be his protege.
Yeah, but beyond just, I think also Woj was more elegant about it. To the degree that there would be context that would follow the reporting, I think he was better at providing context to things. And like actually, instead of just passing along information, understanding the information he was passing along and explaining it, I do think Woj was better at that.
Yeah, I think that's right. So anyway, Shyam's became his protege at Yahoo, and then Woj goes to ESPN. I think they tried to bring Shyam's with him, but whatever, there wasn't enough money for everybody or something. And so now they've grown up to be sort of, now Shyam's is nemesis. But anyway, then what's interesting is there's this whole other industry of reporting, which is all the other stuff. It's all the context. It's all the, you know, it's and some of that's done on all kinds of different platforms and, you know, but some of it's done in Substacks. People are now doing it in their own Substacks and whatnot too. And that's obviously, I mean, that's become a really rich vein of basketball analysis. And that's sort of what you prefer to read and consume, I guess.
Yep.
all right. Well, who are we going to get our Woj bombs from now? Where is it going to come from?
There are other, Shams was the main guy, but there are other people who are new, transactional newsbreakers around the league. There's this guy at Hoopside, Michael Scotto. It seems like he's been getting a lot more lately. Chris Haynes would get stuff. Mark Stein still would get stuff. But I don't know if we need, like, one clearinghouse person. Like, no. I don't... Like, maybe let's spread it around a little bit and, like, not have, like, you know, the official clearinghouse of transactional information.
Yeah, I thought it was better. It would be better if it were not. And there's no question that in the NFL, there's Schefter's the main one, but it's more, it is more democratic. There's some other newsbreakers. And so, yes, not to have everything come from Woj is probably a good thing. And then to your point, I don't know. Like I originally imagined him putting down his phone and writing novels or something. But he's going to be doing this for general manager for St. Bonaventure basketball program. And that's his alma mater. It's a program that he loves and cares about. So good for him for having the wisdom to walk away. You have also written another a piece previewing the movie scene. What we're going to be seeing in our movie theaters today. And I take it you're not going to rush out to see Transformers 1?
Yeah, no, I've had enough. My one and change Transformer viewing experience was plenty for me for my lifetime. So I'm okay.
When did you go see a Transformers movie? When did you do that?
I think I probably reviewed whatever the first one was. That was back when people reviewed movies and I reviewed movies, and I remember, I did that as my job. And I vaguely remember seeing another one, I don't even know how many there have been at this point. Another movie opening this week, and they're not out today, but opening this week, there's a movie called The Substance described it as like the transition from summer to fall. The Transformers thing's like the last quote unquote summer movie. And this movie, The Substance, is like the first like fall award season kind of thing. And it's a movie that won Best Screenplay at the Cannes Film Festival this July, but it's an English language, I don't know whether it's American, but it's an English language movie. It's Demi Moore and Dennis Quaid and this actress Margaret Qualley. And it's sort of a futuristic satire about beauty standards. And Demi Moore plays this aging actress who takes this black market drug, basically, that will transform her temporarily into a younger version of herself. And things happen from there, I guess. It's supposed to be good. It won an audience award at the Toronto Film Festival, which usually bodes pretty well for a movie being commercial. And people who've seen it think it's really good and really interesting. And so, maybe check it out.
You mentioned another horror film that I'm not going to go see because it's a horror film. This one's called Never Let Go.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about that other than it stars Halle Berry. It's by a director who's had some success and done some well-regarded horror stuff in the past. Horror movies are do good, not big box office, but do reliable box office. And particularly in Memphis, I think horror movies have tended to do well. So it seems like every week there's some new horror movie out.
Okay, but then I want to talk about the two anniversary movies that you mentioned. One is Whiplash and one is The Matrix. 10th anniversary for Whiplash. The Matrix is 25th anniversary. The Whiplash is going to be at the Ridgeway Cinema. Whiplash is going to be at the Ridgeway Cinema Grill. And The Matrix is popping up at, and people can check the dates, they can look at your column, Malco's Paradiso and Collierville Theaters. So I saw Whiplash. I thought it was incredibly intense. I enjoyed it immensely. When I watched it, I subsequently read a review in the New York Times just crushing it as being absolutely counter to the entire spirit of jazz, just eviscerating it because it is about a jazz drummer. And so that was interesting. But it's a gripping movie. Do you recall it particularly?
Yeah, I haven't seen it since it came out. I don't know. Sometimes people use setups as sort of metaphors or parables or just avenues to explore other things. It's a movie that's about jazz in the sense that it is about a jazz drummer and jazz teacher.
Right.
The movie is not about jazz. It's just a mechanism to explore this other dynamic going on in terms of a teacher and a mentor and a mentee, and whether, what is demanding and what is abusive and where does the line. You could tell that same story in all kinds of contexts. I think telling it in this jazz drummer context, right, adds a lot. It's conducive to good editing and good sound design, and the movie itself having a particular energy to it. I agree. If you're trying to look at it from the standpoint of someone who likes music, this is not a sense. A, it's sort of weird. Like a young jazz drummer, do those exist? But then B, right, it's like the tone of the movie, the tone of the instructor is not. I wouldn't call it a good jazz movie, but to me, that's just the avenue for the things it's actually about. To me, what's interesting about it is it's sort of the ambiguity is sort of there. Like, is this demanding or is this abusive? And I feel like the movie wants you to conclude that it's abusive. And I feel like there are people who watch it who sort of go the other way. And it's one of these movies that I think sometimes people wonder if people are watching things the right way. Like, you hear that with Breaking Bad sometimes. You've heard that with like the Scorsese movie, The Wolf of Wall Street, where what people are picking up is not necessarily what the filmmaker's trying to put down. I think there's some of that with that movie. Like, it's developed a real cult following, I think, particularly among like younger men. And I wonder if that's always people getting out of it what they're supposed to get out of it a little bit.
But yeah, Miles Teller is the drummer, and J.K. Simmons is Simons is the won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor in that, and that's terrific. The Matrix, I don't honestly remember much about it. Thoughts on The Matrix? It's 25.
I haven't seen that since it came out. That's another, even more so, that's a movie, like I sort of described these both as sort of film bro movies, like very popular among you know, younger white men, basically. And The Matrix, I think, is a movie that teenage boys discover all over again now. If you haven't seen it, like, it will help you with your cultural literacy. Like, if you people talk, people use phrases like red-pilled and blue-pilled, and you don't know what that means, that comes from The Matrix. I have not seen it since it came out, and that was 25 years ago. So I don't feel like my own opinions of it are reliable.
There's more films that Chris mentions in the column, which you can read over at the Daily Memphian, but I did want to ask about the last one, Dark America, The Disturbing Visions of David Fincher. What is that?
Well, they do a monthly drive-in thing, Time Warp Drive-In at the Malco Drive-In. That's a triple feature. So they're showing three David Fincher movies. They're showing Panic Room, Seven, and Zodiac, all sort of different kinds of thrillers. Sort of fits, like, you know, a sort of spooky night at the drive-in, I guess. To me, Zodiac is one of the great movies of our current century. I think that's a flat-out masterpiece. I think the other two are really good, too.
Probably not
what you want. Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Chris.
All right.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. We'll talk to him again tomorrow. We got Sam Hardiman coming up next. I'll tell you that NFL Week 3 is here. You can start the season with a big return on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. If you're new to FanDuel, you can get started with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. That's right. $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. You got Pats and Jets Thursday night. Put together your own same game parlay and prosper. Visit FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. FanDuel is, of course, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Sam Hardiman, when we return, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. Sam Hardiman covers the city and all of the happenings, and now he lives downtown. Sam Hardiman recently moved from Midtown to downtown, and I wanted to know, Sam, how is life downtown?
Life is good, Jeff. You know, there are the of moving, you know, like, for example, this morning I was quite flustered looking for a belt because I didn't know what box the belt was in. And I tore things asunder looking for it. And my very patient wife still has to put up with me as I look for my belt. But downtown is great. It's lovely. Interestingly enough, I remarked to somebody who also lives downtown that it is quieter than Midtown Memphis at night, and they remarked back that maybe that's not a good thing. But, you know, we can cover that in a later episode. But, yeah, downtown's great.
Do you walk to get coffee? Do you walk to get or whatever you like? Do you find yourself walking around downtown? Trolleys, obviously, are still. You're not taking the trolleys downtown, I'll tell you that.
There is no trolley. I did walk. In the midst of Francine last week, I had a business lunch. I can call anything I do a business lunch. I was able to walk to that in the middle of Francine, which was nice. And then this morning I attended the Memphis Light Gas and Water Board of Commissioners meeting, and I walked to that, and it was lovely. It was very nice, and it felt good not to drive to places.
Have you been down to the to Tom Lee Park since you became a downtown resident?
I have not walked down to Tom Lee Park since I became a downtown resident. The weather has not been wonderful since I became. No, and then also I was doing the whole, like, you know, moving a U-Haul situation over the weekend. Shout out to all my friends who helped unload the U-Haul, and very appreciative of that. I will be going down to Tom Lee Park. I think I will take some lovely walks on the riverfront. I have enjoyed a nice downtown sunset from the rooftop of our building. It's very nice. And it's just lovely.
It's interesting. I'm interested in I was just going to ask you what the activity is like in Tom Lee Park. It's funny how polarizing that still is. I mean, we have it, you know, there's no use not wishing well and good things for Tom Lee Park. We did what we did, but it is still polarizing. Like, there's someone who writes me and says, I can't believe they still use the number 1 million people visited Tom Lee Park. There's no way that can be true. And everyone just reflexively uses the number that whatever. And I don't know if we've dug into that number that they say 1 million visitors have come to Tom Lee Park. But it's interesting to me how polarizing it still is. And I just, I'd like one of these future weeks, you got to tell me how well used you think Tom Lee Park is, because I'll be interested. I'll be interested in knowing that. Separate news. We have, you wrote recently about more improvements to the city golf infrastructure. What's coming down the pike, Sam?
Yeah, so the, I'm on the, sorry, someone was coming in to say hello to me unwittingly. Apologize there. Yeah, the Ottoman Golf Course, the city of Memphis and First Tee of Tennessee are planning a what could be up to a $14 million. It wouldn't be a renovation. It would just be a brand new clubhouse, because there is no clubhouse today at Ottoman, or no used clubhouse today at Ottoman. And the newly renovated Ottoman Golf Course would get this. And the city hopes to start this project in the middle of next year, in probably next July. And Nick Walker, the city parks director, told me last week the city has allocated, and you can see this in budget documents if you're so inclined, $6 million, $3 million in fiscal year 2026 and $3 million in fiscal year 2027, which is the next two fiscal years, to pay for this. And then that First Tee will fundraise most of the rest of the in private sector dollars. And there's you know, an interesting plan here with Coastal Fish Company, the very good restaurant at Shelby Farms, as the model to have sort of a dining space out there at the Ottoman Clubhouse to sort of give the clubhouse some revenue beyond golf, and to give the golf course some revenue beyond golf, because I don't know if it would shock many listeners to learn,
The city of Memphis Golf does not make a profit. It, in fact, is a loss leader that is subsidized by other tax dollars from the general fund.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I thought it was also interesting that Nick Walker said, we don't intend to make a profit off of golf, but we would like to, I guess, get closer to breaking even. Like, they think that golf should be an amenity that as a vibrant city that they provide. A public opportunity for people to go out and play golf, and that they want it to be revenue neutral is essentially the goal. The sense I got?
Yeah, exactly. The city would love for the general fund of the city not to be subsidizing rounds of golf, right? That's what they would love. Do they want to be driving revenue, you know, to the parks department to pay for other things from golf? Probably not. And again, you know, Nick, and I didn't put this in the story, but Nick, you know, sort of gave a nod to the demographics of the city, you know, the socioeconomic demographics of the city. It's a city with a relatively high poverty rate, a relatively low cost of living, and those two things kind of go hand in hand a lot of the time. But, you know, if you're making a profit on golf, who are you pricing out of public golf, right? Because if I were, you know, just a city resident who just wanted to play golf on a weekday morning or a weekday afternoon, I can do that. I can play nine holes at Overton Park for $12, right? That's obviously really cheap. If you raise that price, or who are you pricing out of this? And are you making golf, you know, which, you know, public courses, you know, to the history of golf were designed to let regular folk in the United States play golf, right? And if you're pricing those people out, are you just not becoming a private club unto yourselves that just happens to be owned by the city of Memphis?
Separate story. The gun control referenda are back on the ballot, I gather, because of a decision in court by Shelby County Chancellor Melanie Taylor Jefferson. But then separately, so I guess that's going to be appealed. Is that sort of the status of that? Where are we on whether they're going to be on the ballot or not?
It has not yet, as far as I know, of this conversation at 10:45 on September 18th, been appealed, and the city and the state would have very little time. There's very little time for appeal at this point because ballots with these as part of them get mailed the next couple of days to overseas troops and the like, right? And so there's not a lot of time. So appeal is one thing. Yes, they are on the ballot as of today. It could change. There's a chance of change. But right now they are on the ballot, yes. And to your next question, sorry, which I forgot.
Well, the next question was you ask in a wrote sort of a piece talking to lots of folks, are they winning the battle and losing the war? And you refer to a couple of quotes from Cameron Sexton basically saying, listen, we have helped the city of Memphis in all kinds of ways, but it's sounding like basically we're going to be reluctant to continue to do so if the city of Memphis, the way that he phrases it, I get the quote here exactly. He's going to say, let's this. We're going to start next year when we pass our bill telling the cities and counties all across the state, if you violate state law, we are going to withhold your money. That's fair. It's constitutional. Also said, look, I'm not saying it's the hand that feeds them. What I would say is we're willing to help. We've helped with the University of Memphis a lot, the Liberty Bowl, FedEx Forum. We've helped with the Tennis Center. We've helped with the marina on the river to bring in the Viking cruises, other things. We've helped in tremendous amounts all over the county and within our city. We've put more troopers down there, et cetera, et cetera. Basically suggesting, listen, if you wanted to keep getting this help, don't poke us in the eye.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely what the speaker said. He said that with conservative radio station KWAM last week. And, you know, his office made sure to know that we listened to that interview, which I think is telling. The city of Memphis, and we don't have to go into specifics today, maybe we will in the future. City of Memphis, business interests in Memphis have a long list of things that they would like from the state of Tennessee. Okay. And that, you know, there's one thing, and the city, you know, loses $70 million in sales tax dollars, which has been the threat from Sexton. That first would have to hold up in court if that bill ever reached Governor Bill Lee's desk, okay? That would have to hold up in court to take away sales tax revenue from the city. But then there is all of the money and all of the probably tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions, the city of Memphis wants this legislative session from the state of Tennessee. And, you know, the speaker essentially, you know, is one of the most powerful people in Nashville, one of the most powerful people in the state. And if he and his caucus aren't on board with these things and want to, you know, stick a finger in the eye of the city of Memphis because they've been ticked off by the Memphis City Council, that could very well happen. And, you know, while people are often saying, oh, Memphis doesn't do anything, Nashville doesn't do anything for Memphis, the legislature hates the city of Memphis, the Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium renovations that are underway in that very cool hole that it's fun to watch a game looking at does not exist but for the Tennessee General Assembly. The situation with the Memphis Grizzlies and the, you know, really having financing to complete those renovations of FedEx Forum, that is in a very different place without the state of Tennessee and Cameron Sexton's help, right? And so any future help in that regard kind of hinges on his support. And that's, I think, you know, Mayor Paul Young said to my colleague Bill Drees last night, you know, there's a couple days for cooler heads to prevail here. And we will see if there is some resolution. There's also, I want to begin this big caveat. There's still 3 months between now and the federal legislative session. A lot can happen in 3 months. A lot of things can go under the bridge. A lot of water can go under the bridge. There can be, you know, some breaking of bread and some kumbaya that can happen. We'll see. But it is certainly relevant and noteworthy what Cameron Sexton said last week to KWAM and what he says going forward.
Sam, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff.
On Twitter or X at Sam Hardiman. In the meantime, I will tell you, if you are selling your house, we're going to get interest rate decrease today, honestly. Find time to sell your house. And if you're selling your house, you should call Josh Heisaw, 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. Josh has thebuyers.com. We mentioned this earlier. If you want to find out what your house is worth for free, all you have to do is go to the website, type in your address, and up it will come. Josh offers flexible fees, no upfront costs, and see if every other realtor will do this. Let you out of your contract at any time, risk-free. If you're selling your house, call Josh Heisa. More than 300 five-star Google reviews. Phone number, once again, 901-461-8147. JoshHasTheBuyers.com. Got to take a break. Back in a moment, 92.9 FM ESPN. If you're buying a diamond ring, if you're getting engaged, get to Robert Irwin Jewelers. And I told you my experience the first time I got engaged. I got a great deal on a diamond ring. Yeah, I did. I got a great deal on a diamond ring. It was a great deal up until the moment that I took it to be appraised. It was on her hand at this point. We took it in to get appraised, and it was no longer a great deal on a diamond ring once I realized it was worth. Now, here's the thing. At Robert Irwin Jewelers, they've been here for years and years and years. They came down here from New York and realized that Memphis was where they wanted to be. And Howie now has locations across the Memphis community. He's deeply involved in Memphis, loves the city, and he'll walk you through the process and whatever. But at the end of it, there's the meant-to-be guarantee. So if for any reason, 365 days after you walk in and design this beautiful, stunning diamond ring, just like Jeffrey did once upon a time, if for any reason you want to return that ring, you can. It is the meant to be guarantee, which in a nerve-wracking process gives you the ultimate peace of mind. Now, there's a lot of other reasons to get in Robert Irwin Jewelers and buy beautiful jewelry, whether it's someone's birthday or congratulating them on an accomplishment or whatever else. But if you are getting engaged, do yourself a favor and go see our friends at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Jeffrey, I don't know if we have time to get into anything else. We do. The news did come out that Tua is on IR, and so he will be out for at least 4 weeks. That bears watching. But tell the folks what else is coming up next on 92.9.
Make sure you wish Jeff a happy birthday so maybe someone can get a Robert Irwin Jewelers, get him a birthday gift. Just saying. What's coming up next on Jason and John? Hurd will join them. Norton Hurd the Fourth will join them today. Cerrito with us today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. CJ Hurt will join us as well. Cobb will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Got to get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. Our work is done.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again?
With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.